Time for the sustainability feature here on Hot Business with Gold Ore. Tomorrow's technology today. All you have to do is go to goldore.org to find out more. Now, we earlier today as a country welcomed the outcomes of the recently concluded Glasgow Climate Conference, COP26, and it provides parties with a firm basis for the full and effective implementation of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and its Paris Agreement. That's according to Minister Barbara Creasy, more than 190 countries reaching a deal at the 11th hour at the summit. And it's all about accelerating greenhouse gas emissions cuts across the world, but it does leave big questions over how governments are going to follow through in the next decade to try and avert the worst effects of global warming. I'm joined now by Andrew Gilder, who's the Director of Climate Legal and our longtime COP watcher on the line. Andrew, what are your thoughts? High level, was the COP successful or not?
It was a success in the sense that we finally have a rule book to implement the Paris Agreement. So if it was a de minimis success. Why was that a success? Well, in the 6 years since Paris, which was 2015 at COP21, we actually haven't been able to agree that rule book. The Paris Agreement is, if you like, a framework legal architecture for the management of the global climate change legal approach over the next, call it 50 to 100 years. But it's exactly that. It's framework. It's a constitution, if you like. What we didn't have, but what we now do have, is the next step in that process of legal management of the global architecture. If I could put it in perspective, we had the Kyoto Protocol opened for signature in 1997, and it took 4 years until 2001 to agree on the rule book for the Kyoto Protocol. Those were called the Marrakesh Accords. And only at that point could we really delve into the hurly-burly, if you like, of what Kyoto meant. So I say it's a de minimis success because only now can we start really grappling with what Paris means from a national, legislative, and international approach to dealing with climate change.
And that's, I think, a great summation of what the rulebook for Paris means in terms of reaching this finally after 6 years. And I guess also to be seen as something of a success is governments have now formally adopted 1.5 degrees as their official target.
Yes, they have. I mean, bear in mind that they'd adopted that already in Paris. But one of the things that Alok Sharma made, who was the president of the COP, who kind of quite ruefully, I think, said is that 1.5 is still alive. And I mean, that is really important because we were in danger. If we had not reached agreement this time around, we were in danger of things really unraveling. And so now let me be a little bit more glass half full. We do have the framework for going forward. We do have a clear agreement around the phase down of coal. I mean, that is a real win. We've never had a climate agreement that deliberately addresses the eventual end to a coal-based economy. We have that in this agreement now. We also finally, and this was the sticking point over the last 6 years, or at least the final sticking point, we have the rules on Article 6. And Article 6 deals with international cooperation around primarily mitigation, but they are also the rules that then determine what the international carbon market will look like going forward. So there are a number of wins that can be chalked up, but I suppose by the same token, and of course it depends from which perspective you are looking at it, there were a number of failures. For example, one of the most important aspects of the regime going forward is what is known as the loss and damage or the Warsaw mechanism, which is about compensating developing countries for their loss and damage occasioned by climate change. And we didn't really go anywhere at all on loss and damage. I mean, we sort of marked time on that issue. So, I mean, it's a mixed bag, but the minister's correct. The minister is correct in pointing out that 193 countries agreed to this. I mean, that is no mean feat, and kudos must be given to the UK presidency for that.
And as the minister also said, those unresolved issues of the recognition of Africa's special needs and circumstances are kept alive for substantive discussion at the African COP27 to be hosted in Egypt at Sharm el-Sheikh next year.
Yes, and I mean, rather delightfully, there's now a Sharm el-Sheikh work program on adaptation, which now has a two-year time horizon as well. May I point out, I mean, listeners may not be aware, I mean, we don't now all retreat into our burrows for another year and then all come out again in Egypt. In fact, effectively, the whole infrastructure that underpins the triangular international regime, and that triangular regime is the Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Kyoto Protocol, and the Paris Agreement, all of that infrastructure kicks back into gear in April next year. So the people who have just spent 2 weeks hothousing, you know, what is called the Glasgow Climate Pact together, will reconvene in March and April next year and start putting flesh on the bones of that pact.
And that really is the real work now beginning. Andrew, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for giving us your high-level wrap-up of COP26 here on Hot Business. That was the sustainability feature brought to you by Gold Ore. Their revolutionary Mach reactor is disrupting the mining industry with the potential to reduce your carbon footprint. Find out more at goldore.org.